Doom Patrol, Negative Man, Elastigirl, Robot Man.
Someone wants the Doom Patrol reunited.
Your every word and action
is being broadcast across the planet.
Now, Monsieur Mana!
Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
It is too late for you, Calder. Your beloved patrol is doomed.
Hello, and welcome to Waiting for Doom, the one of the best Doom Patrol podcasts there is. Well, probably the best. It's the best, let's just be honest. It's about the Doom Patrol. There's a comic about the Doom Patrol. We talk about all the history of the Doom Patrol and all the comics about the Doom Patrol and stuff. That's what we do. Anyway.
Yes. Hello, I'm Mike. You can reach me on Twitter at AvantGarv. You can also reach us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com or on the Waiting for Doom Facebook page. You can also check out Doug Zavisha's excellent posts on mygreatestadventure80.blogspot.com that enhance the audio you are now listening to. And our episodes are available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and podbean.com.
Hey, I'm Paul. You can find me on Twitter at reading_Hicks. And we also have a Sentient Show Twitter account, which is at it's called Wilfred, and he is at WFD Pod. And we are sponsored by Comicosity, which is a tremendous site about comics. And I've been going over Comicosity regularly, and one of the things that stood out to me was an article. It's in a column called Transmascara. It's a play on the word Themyscira. Anyway,
yes.
But this latest article was that the Second Amendment doesn't apply to the Fourth Wall, and it's a sort of a very interesting essay about the use of guns and the portrayal of guns in comics and the attitudes to guns in comics, and it's fascinating. And that's written by Veronique Emma Huboy, and it's a great article. I highly recommend it. Sorry if I've butchered your name, Veronique. Yeah, it talks about Danger Girl, it talks about Deathstroke, it talks about the creators who had strong opinions about guns, and, you know, DC even allowed two points of view in the comics about guns. So, yeah, it's very interesting, and I recommend that you all give it a look if you want to have your brain entertained and encouraged.
I thought you were going to say something like edutainment.
Edutainment.
I'm sure it's more than that.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Makes you think.
Right.
Yeah, if that's your thing.
Right. Excellent. Anyway, Paul, how has your week and a bit been in comics and such?
It's been okay. I'm very much enjoying The Flash at the moment. The Flash TV show is back on. One of the things they've brought in which has made this series so much better is they've got the elongated man in the series now.
Ooh.
And Ralph Dibny is stretching it up and down all over the show. And I really wasn't a fan of season three of the show. It was just a bummer. And it was whiny Barry.
Right.
And every ep was kind of, get on with it. And the whole season was a bit of a write-off. But they're back and they're doing fantastic things this in season four. And I am loving it. And my family is loving it. So, yeah.
Wow. Awesome.
That's your Flash.
Okay.
Season four going strong.
Nice.
What about you, Mike? What's been happening?
I'm still in the mad, passionate throes of moving house, so that's fun. Kylie and the boys officially moved in on the weekend, so it's been a good adjustment so far. We've got a bit more furniture to move in, but even more exciting is that I actually read some comics.
Ooh.
And they were trade paperbacks, Paul.
What?
I know, right?
I'm the trade person on the show. You're the comic guy. I'm the collection man.
The first one I read was Astro City, Life in the Big City.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so that was very entertaining. I did realize that I have read this trade, but many years ago. So it was a nice revisit, but I'm hooked. I want to definitely get into a lot more Astro City after your very strong recommendations.
Oh,
in some respect.
Wow.
So,
thanks, Mike.
Look who's the tastemaker now, mister. I also picked up Volume 1 of Mother Panic by Jodie Hauser, Tommy Lee Edwards, Sean Crystal, and Jean-Francois Beaulieu. Apologies if I've butchered your name, Jean-Francois. But I loved Mother Panic.
Oh, you loved it. Oh, wow.
I loved it, but I'm only going to pick it up and trade.
Wow. So, okay.
You know, who am I? What's going on? Where's the real Mark?
Down is up.
Wow. That sounds like the issues of, no, I'm not going to start talking about Millennium again. And finally, I read volume one of Terry Moore's Motor Girl called Ooh. Real Life, about a young lady who's a mechanic out in the middle of the Nevada desert, like a scrap junkyard thing, and her best friend is a talking ape. And they help repair a couple of UFOs.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. And
my wife's best friend is a talking ape.
Right. Is his name Paul?
Well, you know him.
So, yeah. So, well and truly getting into the whole vibe, the thing, the mystique of reading trades.
Oh, well done.
So, yeah. It's new year, new me or something.
Oh, wow, Mike. It's off the chain.
It's crazy. It's crazy. You know what else is crazy?
What's that?
All the action that's going down on Darrington Way, Paul. Tell us all about it, mate.
Beautiful segue.
Until you pointed it out.
So we've had a little bit of movement on the Doom Patrol issues. If you, I believe, if you go to DC Comics right now and look on their website, issue 12 comes out on the 21st of March. Okay?
Right.
Issue 12. Issue 11 comes out on the 28th of March.
Right.
I don't think that's going to stay that way. Just a crazy wild guess.
Hang on. You said issue 11, the 28th of March.
Yes. Issue right, 12, okay. The 21st.
I might just be quietly updating some Doom Clock notes as we talk. Anyway, as you were.
It's all in the preparation, everyone. Yeah. But in more exciting and very definite Doom Patrol news, Geoff Johns did a tweet about the script for the Teen Titans TV show, or the New Titans TV show, let's be accurate, which is episode 5, use the right TV terms. Yeah. Episode 5 is titled The Doom Patrol.
Oh, my God, how exciting was that?
Yeah. And they're even casting people in roles now.
Mm-hmm.
So someone I've never heard of has been cast as the Chief.
Yep.
And I'm super excited about that.
He looked very chiefy, I must say.
Yeah. A little bit, he's got a bit of darker skin and stuff, so. But very good.
He's got the beard. He's got the beard for it. Got a bit of a scowl on him, so I think he'll do quite all right.
I'm very excited about this TV show now, and I hope that we get it satisfactorily in Australia so that we can watch it and talk about it as it happens, because that is huge news.
That's huge. Very huge news. Huge.
Huge.
My only concern is that it'll have Mento.
Ah, right.
Because if Beast Boy's in the Titans, then they'll probably play up that angle. But anyway.
Oh, Mento's not that bad, Mike.
You must be new here, sir.
And in other news, there's been a lot of appearances by the Brain and Mallor lately.
Yes.
Seems not a day goes past without people telling Wilfred about a new sighting of the Brain and Mallor in a different comic. So they've been in the latest issues of Teen Titans. They were in the Young Monsters in Love anthology.
Mm-hmm.
There's a whole story about them in there, which I have subsequently asked a comic shop to get for me. So because I
want
to read that. Where else did they turn up? They turned up somewhere else. I can't remember where. But there was apparently a Rita Farr mentioned at the end of Doomsday Clock number 3.
Oh, yes. That's right. Something to do with her parentage, I believe.
I haven't seen it. Have you seen it?
I have seen a screenshot of something, and I won't say anything more.
Okay.
And we'll talk about it later. when you get it. But yeah, I'm sure it had something to do with her family history.
Right. Mm. Yes, and the other main thing going on down in Derrington Way at the moment is Milk Wars is going on. So we've had Woo-hoo. More and more chapters of Milk Wars, and I've been reading them as they came out. So the Mother Panic Batman special was really good. I give that a massive thumbs up. And we also had the Shade the Changing Girl Wonder Woman one. And the Cave Carson Swamp Thing one was really good.
Right. Reading you loud and clear there.
What do you mean? I didn't say anything about the second book that I mentioned then.
The silence is deafening, sir. Deafening. Oh, look, each of their own. Not everything's for everyone, you know. But you know, you read it. You know, you gave it a shot.
Yeah. But, I mean, Milk Wars is a very different and surprising series so far.
Yes.
And it feels really indie. Like, it just, I don't know, it feels super on the edge, you know?
The cover of the final issue with the Doom Patrol Justice League fighting in a giant cup of milk, you know? Yes. It's a little bit different.
And we're going to be talking about that one on the next episode of Waiting for Doom. So it's something forward to. But I think I hear some ticking back there, Mike.
You sure do. And it's the one and only Doom Clock. So looking upon the face of the mighty Doom Clock, we can see it's been 4 weeks since the last Doom Patrol book was in our hot hands. Issue 10 of Volume 6, in which the Patrol fought the Brotherhood of Nada as the effects of the superfood shit caused chaos all around them. And then Terry Nunn gave birth to who knows what as everyone crash-landed smack dab in the middle of Retcon Industries. I love that issue.
It's so good.
It was crazy. Crazy.
Yeah.
Issue 11 is due at this stage on 28th of March 2018, 5 weeks away.
Woo.
So I thought it was only 3 weeks away, but it's changed again.
Yeah.
Shocking. No. This week in Doom Patrol history, with thanks to Mike's Amazing World of Comics, going on sale for a mere 75 cents on February 23rd of 1988, with the cover date of June of that year, was issue 9 of Doom Patrol Volume 2. Paul Kupperberg, Eric Larson, Gary Martin, Johnny Workman Jr., and Carl Gafford gave us the story titled It's Raining Plastic Men, in which the Patrol took on Gargoax's hordes of plastic men to try and stop them from stealing a nuclear missile. Of course. Also in this issue was a bonus short story titled A Life in the Day by Steve Miller, Randy DeBerk, Joe Aladetta, Timothy Harkins, and Elizabeth Kessler. And this tale was a solo spotlight on Celsius as she gained a new perspective on life after spending her day with an elderly lady who then died at the end of the story.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, that was the main story was better than the spotlight, I think. Although, I think Celsius getting a solo story was kind of cool in a way.
Yeah.
But, you know, I do miss Gargoax. I would love to see Gargoax in Volume 6.
Yeah, Gargoax is so good.
I would love to see Gerard and Nick come up with some insane scheme for Gargoax.
Yeah.
That would... hope you're listening, guys. Anyway, we covered Issue 9 way back in Episode 37, Paul, from October of 2015.
Did we?
Yeah, we did. We really did.
Wow.
I wouldn't lie to you, mate. So you can check out episode 37 for far more details on that issue. And that is it for the Doom Clock this week.
Hello, I'm Pat Sampson. And I would like to invite you to join me on my podcast, The Long Box Crusade. On this podcast, I'm reading through my 20-plus long boxes that I have stored away in my basement. On each episode, I will select a random issue from my collection and take a very highbrow, thoughtful approach to examining these truly American art forms that help to shape our popular culture.
Oh, I like comics too. Can I get a comic out of my long box that syncs up with the month and year of the comic from your long box and chat about that too? Oh, and video games. Can we talk about games? Or maybe James Bond too? I love James Bond.
Fine. Jared Elbrick, a.k.a. the Yard Sale Artist. We can add some of your comics and enthusiasm to the show. It might help get a deeper introspection of...
Did someone say James Bond? I love James Bond, and I love comics too. I can bring a comic from my long box to sync up with you guys. I also love movies and music, even news stories that tie into the time period that match the comic books we review.
This is what I get for inviting both the Albrecht brothers into my show. Jason, how the heck can we fit all that into my deeply intellectual review of... Well, you know what? Fine. Let's do it. Let's cram it all into one podcast. Join us on the Longbox Crusade, folks. We'll bounce around in time from issue to issue, pulled randomly from my longboxes, and the Albrecht brothers will bring along issues with the same month and year cover date. We'll talk about the comics and the time period they come from, including...
World news of that time.
Top 40 music chart toppers.
Movies, both good and bad. Maybe even some favorite recipes.
Whatever I think is funny.
We'll probably have to suffer through things that Jared thinks are funny.
We'll jam it all into one pop culture extravaganza, examining the comics in my long box and the time period surrounding them. Join us for a wild ride through time on the Long Box Crusade podcast as we attempt to read them all.
What's in your long box?
Now it's time for Doomsplaining, which is the part of the show where we talk about the Doom Patrol some more, as opposed to the rest of the show. But we're specifically talking about Doom Patrol Volume 3, Issues 9 and 10, which were two fabulous issues that came out in 2002, way back then. And the first one is Issue 9, which Mike is going to take us through. And it's been a while since we've done this issue, this run, and there was a reason for that, and we sort of had to get through the Rachel Pollack run before coming back to this particular issue that Mike is going to take you through right this second.
Yes. Go, Mike. So, yes, previously in Volume 3 of the Doom Patrol, Robot Man, or possibly Phobot Man, was reunited with Gar Logan, the Beast Boy. Thea Jost reunited a mystery hospital patient with their mother. And new patrol member Ava unleashed the freak within her as her inner monster attacked the team. And then we finally learned that the mystery hospital patient was Dorothy Spinner, the eight-faced girl.
What?
We covered these events in much more detail all the way back in episode 103 from August of 2017. Wow.
It's only been 15 episodes.
Yeah. It's now February, though. So, yes, you may want to check that one out for more details. So we'll wait. You can pause this one. Come back. We'll see you in a minute.
103.
Anyway. Issue 9 of Volume 3 is titled My Dreams Have Lied. Written by John Arcudi, art by Tan Nguyet. Bob Lappin did the letters. David Stewart did the colours. And it was edited by Andrew Helfer. And as we dive into it, we see that Cliff Steele is being awoken by a knock on his coffin. A Morrison-era robot man lifts the coffin lid and asks him what he's doing. "I'm dead and I'm staying that way," he replies. Then a Pollack-era robot man appears and asks, "What about Dorothy? What about her? She's okay, isn't she?" Cliff replies. "Maybe that's a question you should be asking," says Pollack Bot Man. Oh, that sounds really wrong. Suddenly, an original 60s-era robot man appears and asks, "Who's Dorothy?" And Cliff climbs back in his coffin and says, "Okay, that's it. He's had enough," but suddenly he's zapped back into the land of the living, into his current Volume 3 Bot Man body, thanks to the new team member and robotics expert, Kolodenko. But while it's unclear exactly as to when that dream sequence takes place, we're brought back to the present, to St. Aloysius Hospital, where Robot Man raced off to, on foot, at the end of Issue 8. He's standing there before the comatose Dorothy, and Robot Man soon has the quote-unquote pleasure of meeting Thea Jost for the first time, actually. As they try to figure out what happened to the first robot man that Thayer met, Dorothy's adopted mother barges in, demanding attention. Her outburst is suddenly silenced by the appearance of the figure Dorothy came to believe as her better mother, an imaginary friend called Darling Come Home. Of course, Mrs. Spinner runs screaming down the hall, and Cliff confronts the imaginary friend, bringing Thayer Joss up to speed on something he probably should have researched better before purchasing the Doom Patrol name. Oh, Thayer. It's at this point that the conversation with Darling Come Home takes a stranger turn as she begins calling Cliff a good man, too good to be true. She then taps the side of Cliff's head and asks him if he remembers what happened to Dorothy, and suddenly it all comes flooding back. Memories of Cliff, Dorothy, and Kate Godwin, aka Coagula, in a car, heading off for a camping trip, waving goodbye to George and Marion, the bandage people, as they leave Rainbow Estates. They're having marshmallows over a campfire as they try to explain to the girl that they found her biological mother. Memories of Dorothy crying as she tries to understand why no one ever wants her around. Cliff trying to explain that it's maybe time she thought of life outside of the Doom Patrol, because there might not be a patrol for much longer. And then memories of tears streaming down Dorothy's face as she asks, why? I didn't do anything wrong. Why? Why don't you want me? And finally, her eyes glowing as she screams, why? And she erupts into a giant explosion, decimating the forest. Yikes. Cliff reluctantly admits that he now remembers what happened, but that they weren't going to dump her. They wanted a new life, a fresh start for her. Darling Come Home asks why he's feeling sorry for her, considering that Dorothy wiped Cliff and Kate off the face of the earth. The imaginary woman tells him to stop making excuses for her as he tries to grasp the reality of it all. She tells him that Dorothy imagined her own version of Robot Man, redesigned the way she wanted him to be, taking care of her and never being too far away. A version of Robot Man that was more in control, more pure, and stronger than ever. But the worst part was that he thought he was real because she never told him that he wasn't. So when someone finally did tell him, he just vanished. Darling Come Home tries to convince Cliff that she isn't the good girl he believes her to be. Despite her persistent vegetative state, she knows she's been naughty, and she's now hiding. It's not the first bad thing she's done, and she's probably doing it again right now. It's at this point that Cliff realizes he's alone with Dorothy again, and he gets up to leave. Thayer Joss tries to strike up yet another business deal, of course he does, but Cliff rebukes him, telling him to chase after the girl's stepmother. Thayer then drops some truth on Cliff and says that the previous robot man struck a deal that would actually take care of Dorothy, and he refuses to believe that the real Cliff Steele wouldn't do the same. And so later that night, Cliff finally returns to DBHQ, the former nightclub known as Bruno's, and much to the delight of his younger teammates. They're delighted to see him again, but Cliff heads to his room saying he doesn't want to talk about it. To which Negative Ted, in his usual charming manner, replies, "Who cares? Let's go eat!" And, yeah, I love this issue because it gives Volume 2 better closure than Volume 2 actually gave the Patrol.
Yeah. I mean, that's why we sort of stopped running this through this series, because this features the supposed death of Kate Godwin, Coagula, and you know, the last time she's been seen in the DC Universe. And the first time I read this, I'd never read a story with Kate in it. I was like, oh, who's this? Who are these bandage people? And who's this random woman hanging out with the Doom Patrol? And then, oh, she's been blown away, literally. And yeah, but now I know Kate, and I see what how sad it was that her character disappeared at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that must have been really messed you up, because I know you're a big fan of Kate.
Yeah. And
To see her I mean, it's nice that she and Cliff actually want better for Dorothy, but Dorothy just doesn't understand what's going on, which is kind of unsurprising, because Dorothy always seemed, well, it depends on who was writing her. One minute she would seem mature, another minute she wouldn't appear mature. And it seems that she was very young in that final story, but I still think it's a better wrap-up for Volume 2 than what we actually got.
Mm. And, of course, Kate's body is not seen, so she can be back anytime anyone chooses to turn their story-writing attention to that task.
Hello, Steve Orlando.
Hello, Steve Orlando. Yeah, great issue, and such a fantastic cover with Cliff kneeling and screaming with massive words, "Who am I?" You know, behind him on a white background. So,
yeah.
But what stood out for you, Mike?
The ending of this issue leaves it a little bit vague as to what actually happens. Like, does Cliff actually sign a deal? Does he have her life support turned off? It's not really clarified. And I can't recall if it is mentioned again later on in this volume, because it's been ages since I've read it. So I'm looking forward to finding out if we get closure on Dorothy in this volume. Mm. But you're right. It's a great issue. As per usual, it's fantastic art from Huat. The story is really strong. There's a nice couple of interludes with Ava and Ted, where he's, you know, trying to talk to her after her apparent suicide attempt in issue 8. So, but I thought it was more interesting to focus on the memories that Cliff has put back in his brain.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. And, I mean, what he said to Dr. Kolodenko after he awoke, where Dr. Kolodenko tells the team the words and he says, "I am rather being ghost."
Yeah.
I love the fact that Ted sees Shailene just smouldering away. This is fever with her barely controlled heat powers. And he lights a cigarette off her head.
Yes. Yeah. So lots of nice little touches. I really wish that Volume 3 got more exposure. I got collected.
I would buy trades of this in a heartbeat.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah.
And every Friday I'm always checking Comixology to see if they've added it, because I would want to tell everyone about it as soon as it's up there.
It would definitely sell. There's enough interest there. You're welcome.
Honestly, it was ahead of its time, I think. I mean, the art by Tang and Hewitt is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And he... And Dave Stewart on colours. I mean, that's the colourist that does Hellboy most of the time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so top-notch talent. It's such a beautiful-looking book. It's so well done, you know. Yeah. And the story it's really hard to predict, and it's, you know, there's a lot of humour in it, and it's probably the most, the funniest of all the Doom Patrol volumes throughout. But,
Okay. Okay.
I love it. Yeah. But I'm going to take you through another issue right now.
Take us through issue 10, please, Paul. Issue
10. So this was, it came out cover dated September 2002, but it was actually on sale on July 3rd, 2002. Cover price of $2.50, fairly pricey back then, but I paid it. Edited by Andrew Helfer, and it was written by John Arcudi again, art by Tang and Hewitt, lettered by Bob Lappin, and coloured by Dave Stewart. And there's a lovely colour or cover of the Doom Patrol against a black background with a sort of monster snaking little tendrils into their ears, and all their eyes are blank. Ooh. And it says sinisterly the words "mental floss," which is a good play on the term "dental floss." So Tan and Hewitt are bringing the goods with that cover.
Mm.
So what's inside? So the team are relaxing in Bruno's when Fever brings Ted a package. It contains a cell phone that rings as soon as he opens the box, and it's Ted's mother on the phone, and she's worked out a way to finally stay in touch with him, because he doesn't stay in touch with her particularly well. So Ted turns to Vic as he is stifling laughter next to him and says, "Boy, you don't start laughing, and I swear to God I'm going to kick you." Meanwhile, Cliff is in the office nearby talking to his new business partner, Thayer Jost, about poll results. So he's done a deal with Thayer to get hold of Thayer gets the licensing rights. Mm-hmm. And Thayer has been conducting a poll on Doom Patrol popularity, and I'm very amused by these results. And he says, I can't ignore these numbers if I want to sell T-shirts. 64% of those polled said they'd rather see the old team members. 59% cited the Chief specifically. 63% wanted to know what happened to the original Negative Man, and a whopping 78% wanted to see Elastigirl. And Cliff is rolling his eyes. And then Thayer says, now I know they're all dead or missing, but maybe we could hire some actors to play. And at that point, Cliff turns, disconnects the call. Anyway, Ted is lurking in the door listening, and he asks Cliff the details of the deal he worked out with Joss. So Cliff leased the team's licensing rights for the price of the building lease. And Ted wants to raise the team's profile, but not like when Joss hired the big bruiser to attack, something Cliff doesn't remember, because that wasn't Cliff. That was, what do we call him? A Phobot Man.
Phobot Man, yeah.
It was Dorothy's imaginary version of Cliff. And Cliff lets Ted, as team leader, take the lead on profile-raising ideas. And Ted says, and don't think I won't, Broham. I got lots of ideas, tons. And we see him later, dozing with the TV on, and he wakes up to see a special bulletin. The JLA villain Amazo is attacking downtown, and this is exactly the opportunity that he's hoping for the team to encounter. And he runs to gather the team, and soon they're off in the team V-Dub combi. Ted's enthusiasm and navigation is firstly interrupted by his mum calling on his cell phone, now in a nice belt holster, and secondly interrupted by a man in the middle of the road, which causes Cliff to swerve and tip the van on its side. Shailene is the first to climb out and check on the man in the road. He has been stumbling about trying to ineffectively slash his wrists with a dime. And Vic spots the suspicious pale man watching from the embankment above, the same pale man who was there the night Ava tried to hang herself from issue 8.
Ooh.
We covered episode 103. So anyway, after the ambulance has arrived, which was summoned on Ted's phone, the team goes searching but the pale dude, despite Ted's frustration that they should be battling Amazo instead for a higher-profile battle, they come across a huge closed-down factory somewhere Vic used to skate, and he guides them to an access pipe. As Cliff opens the vent, a massive worm monster bursts out with a tentacled maw grasping towards the team. Kid Slick, Vic, snatches Cliff out of the way just in time and uses his friction-negating powers to get him all the way back. But the rest of the team are suddenly the monster's targets. And Ava turns and her own tentacles sprout to squeeze the insidious invertebrate, allowing the team to rally to join her. Nearby, the pale man and his, let's call it a mascot, sort of familiar demon. Let's call it a dominion. Semyaza.
Nice.
Semyaza is playing his harp, and the pale man tells Semyaza that there is no celebratory harp playing as the man's suicide was thwarted. But another dominion follows the pale man and whispers something to him, which immediately cheers him up. Jubilation! And they say there is no god, he pronounces. Outside, the team have finally defeated the worm when suddenly more monsters in all shapes burst out of the pipe and attack them. One particular smoky-looking creature sends wisps of smoke into their ears, causing them all to blank out. They awaken in a darkened cave. Nostrils assaulted by a terrible sulfuric smell. They move upward till the cave opens, and they see spread out before them a vast cavern filled with gigantic and smaller flying demons. And then Ted's phone rings.
Oh, Ted.
See what I mean about the comedy, though? Come on.
True. Yeah.
Yeah. Perfect comic timing on that last moment.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a greatish. This is a great one, isn't it?
It is. The art in particular. Everything about it is really cool. But the art, when the monsters attack, it's just fantastic stuff. Like when the first giant worm comes up and just that full page of the expressions on the face of the team as they're running away in sheer terror. I love that page. And like Cliff is standing there, you know, with the sewer grate lid still in his hand. And Vic's kind of like, well, come on, dude, let's get you out of here. And he's like, oh, yeah, sorry, I'm a bit rusty on my reflexes. Yeah. And, of course, Negative Ted's like, hey, why is he getting the free ride?
Yeah, and Ted gets all the best dialogue in this issue.
Yeah.
You know, and he's so happy to have the team back in action. But you're right, we don't really know what the full deal is that, you know, was Dorothy protect. I mean, I can't imagine that Cliff wouldn't look after Dorothy and you know, continue her medical care with some sort of deal. I don't believe Cliff would, you know, not allow that to carry on.
Yeah.
So, you know, he has now has a business partner in Thea Jost.
Lucky.
Yeah. Thea's very shrewd, really, but not very nice.
No.
He's not the worst businessman in the world, let's say that. But anyway.
he's not just, you know, I'm pretty sure he's doing better than the fifth richest man in the world.
Yep.
But there's lots of action in this, you know, like where the V-dub is roaring and swerving to miss the guy on the road, the monsters attacking, the final page where they're, you know, in that hellish chasm with those giant beasts lurking around. That looks awesome.
It does, doesn't it?
Mm.
Yeah. Now, a guy who I sit next to at work is a massive V-dub combi aficionado.
Right.
So I actually showed him this, and he was very impressed with the way the combi was drawn.
Oh, wow. So,
yeah.
Jeez. Yeah. Okay. But, yeah, I'm looking forward to learning more about this pale man and his little Dominion sidekick and the harp.
Yeah, he reminds me a little bit of Grant Morrison, a little bit, if he had milky white skin.
Right, yes.
And was bald. But, you know, he's got sort of almost a little bit Spider Jerusalem, the glasses that he wears.
A little bit.
Yeah, but another fantastic issue. And, you know, it ends with the team in a real pickle.
Yes.
I can't wait to see resolved.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. I love this run.
Yeah.
Volume 3, so good.
So good. So in need of reprinting. Something.
Yeah. Come on, DC. Come on, Comixology.
Yeah.
Anyway, do we feel like that's doomsplained?
I think so. I think we've said it all. They're two great issues. Issue 9's a little bit bittersweet for me because of the connections to Volume 2. But then Issue 10 plunges headlong into the next storyline. So they're both great.
Yeah. All right. Onward.
And now it's time for the question of the week. And last time on the show, we asked you which comic book character looks best in black and white. First off, we heard from Doug Zavisha, Dougie. And he said Moon Knight.
Ah, because he is black and white.
Yes, very much so.
And then we heard from Joe Crawford, who said Zot, the... is that the guy who did the Understanding Comics, Scott McCloud's character?
I think so.
Yeah, so cool.
Yes. Ryan Daly at RyanDaly01 said they made a whole series about Batman in black and white. which Wilfred replied, what was this series called, human? Oh, Wilfred.
Oh, dear. We heard from Craig Mack, who said, Mr. Nobody, good call.
Excellent choice. Excellent choice. Sean AZ or AZ at Sean42AZ or AZ. He also said that he would go with Moon Knight and gave us a picture of Moon Knight in his white business suit and mask.
Nice. We've heard from Martin Gray at Mark Gray, and he said Bruce Wayne and put up a picture of Bruce Wayne disco dancing, staying alive, wearing a bit of a John Travolta outfit.
Mm,
oh, very. Batman.
Disco Batman, oh yeah. Bob Garonellis at Slermo, he replied with, why the Punisher, of course. What? Oh, I think that you meant which comic book character looks best as a black or white person. Hashtag don't kill me, I'm so embarrassed, as is Mike Baron right now. Ooh, also, original Batlash. Right.
We heard from Susan Canary at Black Canary, Black_Canary02, and she said Strangers in Paradise. And then she said, oh, sorry, character. But seriously, I love Terry Moore's black and white art.
Yep, that's a good choice. We'll allow it, Susan. Rifty at Rift1821 also said Mr. Nobody.
Yay.
Excellent choice.
Ian Grant Richter on the Twitter said... It looks like it's White and Black Spider-Man.
That it is. Spidey when he joined the Future Foundation.
Ah, Future Foundation Spidey.
Yes.
In the white outfit.
Yes. It was an interesting period for them. Anyway, we then heard from Chris at BTO and Batbooks, or the Batbooks for Beginners podcast. He chumped in with Dave Sims Cerebus is always in black and white when I think of him, or when he goes, gah, colour, like the cover of Spawn issue 10. We had that issue back in the day. That was fun.
I've still got that issue.
Ah, look at you, Mr. Showoff.
Ah. We heard from ITG Blodcast, and they said Ms. Tree.
I know nothing about Ms. Tree. Was she a detective or something? Or
yeah, she's a bit of, female detective. Max Collins and Terry Beatty were the creators. They also created Wild Dog.
Oh, okay. Yes. Good to know. We heard from Doug Zavisha again, and he said he's with Sean. He's also agreeing with Moon Knight, but he says that Rifty makes a very good point with Mr. Nobody.
We heard from our mate Tim Price at Tim Price 17, and he said Spectrum, who I 100% affectionately call Captain Monica these days, so her initials can be CM. Is that Monica?
Monica Rambeau, who was also known as Captain Marvel for a time. Hence the CM.
Right.
Listen to me spouting off Marvel knowledge. Good God.
Yeah.
Ange at Dr. Ange 70 replied with 10 from the Royal Flush Gang. Yep. Or The Spot.
I might save that picture of 10. That's save it to the hard drive, don't we?
What would you rate her out of a certain numeric value?
She's wearing a black and white figure hugging outfit that and she has the figure to hug there.
Oh yeah. My God.
Anyway, sorry.
Anyway.
Move on. We heard from Jimmy McGlinchey, and he said Batman is great in black and white. He said the worst one is the Green Lantern in the Showcase Present volumes, where you have to play the whole guess which object is a yellow game.
Oh, good God.
The Showcase Presents volumes being black and white, of course.
Yes. Alan Middleton at Professor Allen said that was an easy question by Doom, and gave us a picture of Dr. Doom in black and white.
Is that Dr. Doom? So it's Skeletor?
No.
Sure.
I have to go and look at the thing again.
It's not Skeletor.
Oh, you trickster.
We heard from Scott X from At the Mind of Scott X, and he said the Phantom Stranger. Yeah, he does look pretty groovy in black and white.
Jack Rocha, or Rocha, apologies if I mispronounced that, Jack, at Old Fashioned Outlaw said Negative Man, the 1960s red and white design uniform. Yeah, that's cool.
Oh, yeah, good in black and white. Joe Crawford again at Iowa's Joe said Casey Jones from the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Our mate Kevin, who this week is known as Wet Mane Chervil Kite, said Batman. It was a really cool piece of Batman art in black and white.
Nice. Jeffrey Brown at Chizigo said Tank Girl, of course.
That was one I was not expecting. I'd completely kind of forgotten about Tank Girl.
Yeah, that's left field. Yeah.
Yeah. Carl Bakey at C Bakeware said any of my noir buddies, especially but not limited to Batman, Daredevil, and Rorschach.
Nice. Ed LaTorre at Dr. Wife quote said, I mean, manga to start with, since most of the medium is black and white and those characters can look amazing in inks. But if you want to go costume, I have to say either Black Suit Spider-Man, as drawn by Todd McFarlane, or Phantom Girl, as she's appearing in The Terrifics. Mm. Oh, good choices. Yeah. Nice. Looking forward to The Terrifics. Are you going to get The Terrifics, Mike?
I have that one ordered, yes.
Ooh.
I'm really looking forward to that. Yeah.
It's good.
Clinton at Coffin Comics Blog on the Twitters said Miyamoto Usagi from Usagi Yojimbo or the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Nice.
Very good. Cool. Saul Bishop said Gene Collins' Tomb of Dracula. Yeah, some good black and white stuff in that.
And then Matt Roberts, Mr. Underscore Obert came in with Grendel.
Yeah, good one.
Yeah, that's very cool.
There was a whole, I think there were two miniseries called Black, White and Red.
Nice.
Grendel, yeah. Aaron Long. Oh, juice. He said, Crazy Quilt, a character who's known for being in black and white, Samuel.
Yep. Yep. Thank you, Aaron. Thank you very much. Sean AZ or Sean AZ at Sean42AZ or AZ again chimed in and he gave us a picture of Domino and said she's pretty great too. That's a cool pic of Domino. Yeah.
And then we heard from Kelly Tindall at Kelly Tindall. Wow, we've never heard from Kelly. And oh, she Kelly. Said Phone Bone from Jeff Smith's Bone comic. Excellent.
Nice. Very choice. Cool choice. Keith Corbeck at Keith Corbeck said the best is Batman, the worst Rainbow Raider. There's a showcase Booster Gold story with him and it makes no sense. And he provided us with a picture of that black and white art. And yeah, it's ridiculous.
I know the story, and the Rainbow Raider makes different colours happen in environments at different times for different effects.
Right. So,
yeah, it's not really the same in black and white.
No.
We heard from Deep Out Superhero, and they said Craig Thompson, who did Blankets and Carnet Devoyge. It is by Carnet, I don't know. I've read Blankets, I remember that one. Anyway, okay. And also the Paper Girls and Hellboy, they all look good in black and white. Ooh, interesting choices there, a bit different. Mm.
Tamanoa at Clover O'Leander, apologies if I mispronounced that, chimed in with Hellboy.
Ah, good one.
Another vote for Hellboy, yeah.
And we heard from Danny, Prince of the Culture, and they said a Moon Knight, another vote for Moon Knight. Yeah.
Mm. Excellent. Who's your choice for best in black and white, Paul?
Well, I went with a character that I'm very used to seeing in black and white from all the early adventures of this character, and I went with Judge Dredd.
Ooh, nice.
Looks awesome in black and white, Judge Dredd.
Excellent choice.
Excellent what about choice. You, Mike?
I'm hopeless at these things. I'm going to go with Spider-Man. Mainly from reading him in the comic strip version in the newspapers with my dad when I was a kid. That's just a nice memory that I have of him. So, yeah, I'll say newsprint comic strip Spider-Man. There we go.
Cool. Very cool. Yeah.
Very cool.
And we also got an iTunes review, a new one.
Woo! Hooray!
Yeah, and this review is entitled Decapitated Scientists and Gay Gorillas. And it's by Secret Spy from the USA. And Secret Spy said, Doom Patrol is one of the weirdest, most wonderful comics out there. And these boys will talk you through its various incarnations from the 60s to the present day with humor and insight. When I need a break from politics, this is my go-to podcast, Comic Book Science. Yes! And that was a 5-star review. Thank you, Secret Spy.
Thank you, Secret Spy. Get in touch somehow and give us your deets so we can send you a postcard, dude. Or do
Doom Patrol postcard. A Waiting for Doom postcard, in fact. Mm. Yeah, we'd love to send you one. So, yeah, let us know who you are and where you are, and we'll send you one. Can't wait. Thank you. And that goes for anyone else who can give us an iTunes review. It's been a while, so thank you. Well, I guess that's it for this episode of Waiting for Doom, but we will be back next week with an episode of DC OCD where we will be covering Millennium, finally, Mike.
Finally.
Stoked Yay. For that.
So stoked.
Anyway, the week after that, we'll be back with another Waiting for Doom, and we'll be covering Milk Wars Part 5, the finale, the last bit of spilled milk, which is called Doom Patrol JLA. That's the name of the comic where it's happening. So looking forward to that. And,
that I'm stoked for.
Yeah, yeah. And we also have a question of the week, and this is a bit of a thinking one. Which comic creator would you make exclusive to a particular company? So you could move a comic creator or make someone stay there. Name who you would want to do what where, if that makes sense.
Yes. Oh, dear.
As always, you can get in touch with us on the Twitters at WFDpod. You can email us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com. You can go to the Facebook page and leave your comments there. And there's also Doug's site, mygreatestadventure80.blogspot.com. And that's all we've got time for.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you, Mike. And we'll be back shortly with more Waiting for Doom.
Waiting for Doom.